हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीमद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Next volume, on page 2, chapter 73, Lord Krishna blesses the liberated kings, 74, the deliverance of Shishupal at the Rajasuya sacrifice, 75, Duryodhana humiliated, 76, the battle between Salva and the Vrishnis, 77, Lord Krishna slays the demon Salva, 78, the killing of Dantavakra, Vidurata and Romaharshana. 79, Lord Balaram goes on pilgrimage. 80, the Brahmana Sudama visits Lord Krishna in Dwarka. 81, the Lord blesses Sudama Brahmana. And 82, Krishna and Balaram meet the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Chapter 73. Lord Krishna blesses the liberated kings. Pratigya. Reverses in life are sent by Krishna as reminders to surrender to Him. Right? So that's the principle, is that reverses, because we're thinking, why does God do this to us? But we're never asking, why aren't I surrendering? Yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna, after freeing the kings imprisoned by Jarasandha, mercifully gave them His audience and bestowed royal gifts upon them. When Lord Krishna freed the 20,800 kings Jarasandha had imprisoned, they immediately fell to the ground to pay him obeisances. They then stood with joined palms and began to pray to him. Seeing their imprisonment as an act of mercy by the Lord to smash the false pride, the kings prayed only to be granted whatever would facilitate their perpetual remembrance of his lotus feet. Right? Because now that they see this, they don't want to have more than what's going to make that work. So by getting back their kingdoms or this or that, it will get in the way of their devotional service, then they don't want. They just want which will make their devotional service go nicely. The Lord assured the kings that their prayer would be fulfilled. He instructed them, quote, worship me by performing Vedic sacrifices and protect your subjects in accordance with the principles of religion. Fixing your minds on me, beget progeny, and remain always equipoised in happiness and distress. Thus, at the end of your lives, you will surely attain me. Right? So, they're fixing their minds upon Krishna. That's the essential ingredient. And then they're doing all the activities that kings would do, performing the Vedic sacrifices, protecting the subjects. Right? In accordance with religion, not just false ego. Then, you know, because religion will dictate you should do or not. Well, we see Duryodhana wanted to do a yajna, but it was false ego. It wasn't that religion dictated. Right? Why would Yudhishthir do the Rajasuya? Because his father gave instruction. Right? So to follow the instructions of the father, then that's an appropriate religious activity. Therefore, he was doing Rajasuya. No one told Duryodhana he should do a big yajna, but he wanted to because Yudhishthir did. So it's just false ego, just pride. Right? So, yeah.
So now you mean that the service must be received.
Yes. That's why they were saying, only give to us, only to be granted whatever would facilitate the perpetual remembrance of his lotus feet. So what Krishna wants to give. So Krishna is in the heart. He knows the nature. He knows what we need. He knows our past endeavors. He knows everything. But at the same time, he also knows our consciousness. We may fool ourselves, but you can't fool Krishna. Right? He's sitting right there. Right? So now that's the whole idea, is that He grants the facility. So we just serve with whatever facilities we have according to our nature. We serve. And then what the result of that, we continue to serve. You know, as explained, Srila Prabhupada explains that when something comes to the Aniruddha position or result, right, that then goes back to Prajumna, which means now it's the now it becomes part of the field of activity, and now the attitude including that now. Does that make sense? You work to get a house. Then you have the house. It's not a goal anymore. It goes back to Prajumna. That's part of the Sambandha. Now, you use this house. You know, now you have the attitude that I have a house and I can use this for Krishna. Now you use it for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So whatever our situation, we use that for Krishna. And then whatever situation that generates, we use that for Krishna. So that's what we're always doing. We're always engaged in activities that of dealing with what we have for Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the idea. So they're praying for that they will always be able to fix their minds. And then on their own, fix their minds on me, beget progeny, remain always equipoised in happiness and distress. So from performing Vedic sacrifices, protecting the citizens, begetting children, then they're going to go through situations of happiness and distress. So they're to be equipoised. So whatever happens in these situations, one's equipoised. Does that make sense? So we don't catch, oh, see, he says do Vedic sacrifices and beget progeny. You know, what about the protect citizens in accordance with Vedic religious principles, fixing your mind, equipoised in happiness and distress? So you understand how the mind and conditioning works? Out of all these things, we catch the ones that I can relate to. What we see is that worship me, okay, then according to religious principles, fix your minds on me and remain always equipoised in happiness and distress. Right? We go, oh, that's just philosophy. Okay. Perform Vedic sacrifices, protect your citizens, beget progeny. Okay, I can relate to that. Yeah, so they go together. So you see there's three of one to four of the other. So that's the prominent thing. So if remembering Krishna, then we perform our duties, you know, without attachment to results. Because if you're equipoised in happiness and distress, means you have to be unattached. So by saying you're equipoised in happiness and distress means the results of all activities are for Krishna. Yeah, yes.
It sounds like a blend of Vaidhi, Raganuga and Dharma.
Yes. Yes. Because the whole idea is that all activities, means you're dealing with the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis, you're dealing with Dharma. What's the nature of things? And there, because if we want a result, it's just like this. Okay, let us say, okay, we're going to cook somebody, they want to eat some potatoes. Right? So now, what does that require? Then you have to go back. Okay, that requires, you know, potatoes. That requires, you know, however they want it cooked. Then it requires that particular medium to cook it in, what goes along with it, and all those kinds of things like that. And so then, all that's there. Then you have to actually cook the preparation to get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, therefore, without religion, jnana and kriya don't work. But the sad dharma is it pleases Krishna, is the icha. So that's why dharma is inherent in bhakti. We, not being in that position, we engage to the best of our abilities whatever we have. But if we don't understand the dharma or nature of something, even we're using whatever we have. So this idea is, oh, you know, we don't have to use the Vedic, we can use the modern. Yeah, fine, as long as you understand the principles that the modern's working on. You know, or it's at least the point is that the results for Krishna. Right? So then I'm giving the result, even if I don't know how to get it, but I'm endeavoring that you should get, and I'm not getting any result. But at least the idea is that if I would get a result, I would give it to Krishna. So you have to start there and then work out. So dharma is inherent. Then the rules then see to the structure of it, and then it all goes on nicely and all that. Because the dharma will be what it is. Then you're going to apply that. That will be your vaidhi.
Yeah.
right? But that's the point is that it should come to the position where it's just to please Krishna, so it has that spontaneous aspect. So for us, as Brajabasis at least, there's no problem between these three. You know, sometimes devotees will make a distinction between them too much, and that, but if you're going to get rid of religion and get rid of vaidhi, what are you going to have left? You say, I'll have rag, but what is it, how will that rag be expressed? So that ends up as a sahajya. Because that's the thing, they don't use the standard things and they try to express their devotion. You know. So they end up doing all kinds of weird stuff. Yeah. Because they just make it up. So that's the whole point. If we don't accept religion as given in Shastra, it's guaranteed if we're conditioned, we will make it up. Otherwise, if you don't accept religion because of devotional service, because we chant Hare Krishna, then you'll look something more like Vamsi Das Babaji or the Python Sadhu. Like that. That's that we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care about the rules. That's what it looks like. But if you have this whole form of what you do and this and all these different rules on everything, then you've made up your own religion. And so since we're conditioned and we tend to, you know, prone to make, let's see if we can get all four, right? Prone to make mistakes, illusioned, imperfect senses, and cheating. Okay, we got all four. So because of that, the religion, whatever religion we make up, will be flawed. Guarantee. It may have some strength in some area, but it will be flawed. And so, it may take care of one aspect that we're, you know, what our value is, but it will break down so many others, so it'll create problems since everything's connected. You know, it's just like, okay, I don't want to take out the garbage. That's fine. But what happens after, you know, a week? You know, it starts getting pretty, you know, messy and full and stinky and all that. So, everything has an effect on everything else. That's why the Vedic Dharma, then the effects that it have are all in the mode of goodness. Well, when we don't follow anything we make up, seeing that we're based in passionate ignorance and we're avoiding the Vedic, so that means we're avoiding the mode of goodness. So within passionate ignorance, we may, according to our nature, choose that which is more towards goodness. You know, like that. You know, like, protect the puppies or something. You know, like that. So it may be more goodness within passion and ignorance. So therefore it appears, no, but this is goodness and all that. And, you know, it's within, yeah. You know, it's the nice one of the, you know, it's like the cute little piranha instead of the big, you know, old, ugly looking piranha. You know. Does that make... The whale, yes. Big fish. Okay, thus at the end of your lives you will surely attain me, because it was all about Krishna. You are remembering Krishna, doing your duties because Krishna said, and you're trying to be equipoised so that whatever situation comes up, since it's about Krishna. In other words, let's say you're trying to do your activity, it's not going so well. But the point is, since it's about Krishna, now what do? Try to alleviate the problem to get the proper thing for result for Krishna. So whatever the problem comes, you just keep trying to get the right one. And then if you get the right one, then can you be elated in happiness? No, because it's for Krishna. You're happy you got the right result, right? There may be a distress because it's not going right. It's not that you don't have these experiences, but they don't affect you. Because if you're happy, it's because it's got something nice for Krishna. Distress means we didn't get something nice for Krishna. So therefore, in happiness we got, we continue doing that. And if it's distress, we continue trying to adjust it until it does work for Krishna. Does that make sense? It's not that we're like robots that have no feelings. Right?
But we need to be fixed.
We need to be fixed in devotional service. Therefore, fix your minds on me. So that's the point. So then doing all this for Krishna, thus at the end of your lives you surely attain me. Right? So that ends his instruction. So it's the same instruction in Gita. Same exact instruction in Gita. Like that. So it's the universal instruction. Lord Krishna then saw to it that the kings were properly bathed and dressed. Right, because probably up to this point, being in jail, they probably hadn't had a bath for a while, right? And he had Sahadev offer them flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, fine clothing, and other things suitable for kings, right? Because they're kings, so he brought them to that You know, they haven't experienced this since they've been in jail. Right? After having them adorned with jewels and golden ornaments, he seated them on chariots and sent them off to their respective kingdoms. Right? So they were taken away by John, but they go back as kings. You know? In accordance with the orders the Lord had given them, they began to carry out their various duties once again. Right? But according now they were Krishna conscious. While they said before, they were performing their duties but getting distracted and forgetting him. But now by being in Jarasandha, having imprisoned them, now we see is now they become fully Krishna conscious, so now they can do their duties without getting distracted. So no need of Jarasandha imprisoning them. Therefore you could kill Jarasandha. Right? Otherwise he was, you can say he's creating trouble, but 20,800 kings were getting a benefit of advancing into Krishna consciousness. So one asks, why didn't he go immediately? Why did he go to Indraprastha in that 2 months then gave them that time to reflect? Right? Because giving that message means now they've come to the understanding, but now they come to the realization. So now when Krishna frees them, now they're able to do it nicely.
They were doing good preaching.
Yes. Yeah, so all that is all. That's the point. Connected to Krishna, everything works out nice. Nothing doesn't work out nice. Interesting. Nothing doesn't work out nice, or everything works out nice. Right? One's the positive, one's the negative. Lord Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna then departed for Indraprastha, right? They've defeated Jarasandha, they put his son on the throne, they've released the kings, they've given them instruction, sent them back to their kingdom. So now that means 20,801 kingdoms are now in support of Yudhishthira. So that's what Uddhava was saying. By doing this one thing, then you make both possible. You free the kings and you make the Rajasuya sacrifice.
So Sahadev means Jarasandha's son
offered
flower garlands to the kings.
It could be. Yeah, it has to be because they didn't bring Sahadev with them. Okay. So that must mean there because he's the one that has all the stuff. Right? They just came there as Brahma Snatikas. It's not that they have chariots in their back pockets and Bhima has, I got a few in my bag. So Sahadev then he would have arranged that. His father did imprison him, so they should, take care of it. So then he gave them, dealt with them properly and all that. So now they'll all be allies, right, rather than now enemies. Because that was the problem. They weren't supportive of Jarasandha. So by Sahadev doing this and agree, then now he has 20,000, allies rather than 20,000 enemies. Right? So good, right? You get a whole country as an ally simply for a flower garland, some nice clothes, and a chariot. Wouldn't you do it? Okay, one Maybach. A nice suit and a few other things, and now the whole country is your supporter. Hey, who's not going to do that? Lokadasharanam. Summary of verses 1-16. The kings offer prayers. As soon as a king becomes rich in material opulences, he wants to dominate other nations by military aggression. That was the problem, right? So Jarasandha's doing it, they're doing it, and so just he's better at it than them. So he continues and they end up in his jail. Right? 17-30. The Lord blesses the kings. As you live your lives, begetting generations of progeny, encountering happiness and distress, birth and death, always keep your mind fixed on me. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it. Remaining self-satisfied, steadfastly keep your vows while concentrating your minds fully on me. In this way, you will ultimately attain me, the supreme absolute truth. Right? So, in this, as you see, is that what's being recommended is, like we were discussing before, the transcendental platform. And on that transcendental platform, then you're going to serve Krishna. How are they going to do that? Since they don't have their spiritual bodies, they're going to do it as kings. Right? So the duties of kings, they're going to do all these things, and they're going to come across all this happiness and distress in the performance of their duties. Right? Encountering happiness, distress, birth, and death. But always keep your mind fixed on me. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it. So one may ask, or it comes up many times, is that, well, if they're detached, how will they do the duties? But who's detached and doesn't do duties? Right? The impersonalist. Mm-hmm. Right? The karmi is attached, does duties. The impersonalist is detached and doesn't do duties. Right? At least not these duties. So then, for the devotee, then we give up the idea of karma that I enjoy, but we also have to give up the attachment to the gyan, the liberation. Therefore, we can do duties in a detached mood, because it's for Krishna, right? We do things in attached because of affection, right? Affection for ourselves and anything extended from ourselves that we identify with. Family, friends, community, whatever it is, right? You know, blue whales. Yeah, anything, right? All these different things are there. But it's attachment that does. So all we're doing is shifting it, that is attachment to Krishna. That we're doing the same things. But then we remove these happiness, distress, birth, death, all these different things go away. It means they don't affect us. It's not that they're not there. They just don't affect us. Does that make sense? So that's then what is being recommended. So from that transcendental position, so it actually has more taste than the taste of dealing with family and friends because of attachment. Because that's service to Krishna, and they're Vaishnavas, and you're interacting based on devotional service. There's more taste. Right? But because we're so used to the idea of karma and jnana, so karma has taste, jnana doesn't have taste for someone attached to karma. And for someone attached to jnana, jnana has taste, karma doesn't have taste. So that's why what Krishna is recommending is so unique. Right? Because then it's about, I'm performing my duties, that gets results without attachment. Right? I'm going to be detached because of the liberation aspect, but I won't perform duties. Or I'm going to perform duties because of the benefit I'll get. So here is, I'm going to perform duties with detachment for the benefit that Krishna will get. So we can see is that it has so much more flavor in it than the standard, the material alternatives. Because if they were so good, why are people in the material world miserable? They would be fabulous, right? If you've down at human life, it means you've been here a while. You come in as Brahma, the second birth after that's not here. You understand? It takes a while to get down to here. Right? So being here means we've gone through a lot of stuff. Right? Now, if you're born in this very highly religious, you know, Vedic family, then, okay, it could still maybe be coming down, but probably not. So if we're appearing outside of the Vedic culture, then we can understand we are coming up from something. Like that, you know. Always wondered why you really like puppies. Well, last life, but yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yes, instructions are the same as Gita. So that's the whole point, is that Gita is the basis of all the philosophical points. There's not more philosophical points. There may be finer details and applications given in Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the fundamental points are the same. That's why the descending process is, has the fundamentals, then it has unlimited application. Right? Krishna is one, and then his energies, then that's where the diversity is. Right? So seeing it all in connection to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, then it works. Then you get that consistency. Right? But we have to be able to accommodate that the energies are for pleasing Krishna, not ourselves. Because the problem is, as soon as we drop into the application, then we bring in our own benefit. That's where the problem comes. That's why he's saying be detached from body and everything connected to it. So if you do that, the taste is so much higher. We're just not used to it. Mm-hmm. So therefore the arguments are generally from karma or jnana. Mm-hmm. And then in karma it may be pious, it may be impious. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Or, you know, the quasi-pious, you know, the upadharma and all, chala dharma and all these other things. Chala dharma would be dharma that's political. You know, he politicized it. Upadharma means we're taking the, we're not taking the activity of the dharma, we're just taking the qualities required and making up our own. You understand? So, the morality is one thing. But when it's called just, in this case, morality, it means it's without the dharma. Dharma includes morality. That's why you say dharma, you don't have to say morality. But when you're talking on pranamoy, you have to say morality, because artha doesn't include morality. I mean, it means it's part of the scene if you want to be successful. But then you have morality, you have, the economic gain, and you have justice. So the three aspects of the whole thing. But it's only because the more you work together, in other words, the more you use morality, and the more you don't, you know, there's justice, you don't steal from each other and you give everyone the due, the more money you make. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, you know, the guy is hardly able to get by and maintain himself and his family. He's really struggling. And then, you know, he's now, will he be the right one to send, you know, over, you know, how you say, overseas by, I don't know, give him a kayak or something because you want to save money and stay in a motel. Then he'll go down to that huge fancy 5-star hotel, meet the huge big billionaire guy, and then do that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollar contract with him. Right? And then after that, go back to his little, you know, flea bag hotel. Right? That would be efficient, right? No. The guy's getting a ridiculous amount of money. You're flying in first class. He's staying in the big hotels and this and that. Now he'll happily make you $100 million contract. So that's the whole point. This is how justice, morale, all these things work. It just makes more money. Does that make sense? So we're so used to that. Like that. Because that's now the prominent feature in society is the bourgeois element. Right? Up to, let's say, World War I, bourgeois was always, it's always been there. But you would generally see the nobility would be the more prominent element in the society. And then you go back further, then it would be, you know, religious persons or philosophical persons. I mean, it would be philosophical. Right? And then you go back before that, it would be religious. Not that kings weren't there, but it's like, what, how do you say, Charlemagne. He was known because he's a big king. It means he conquered everybody. But he's more known that he was Christian, and that he spread Christianity through that. Right? So as you go back, you see these kings were religious, and this, and that, and ones who weren't, they were not the good guys. So they were more known for being good or bad, not by how powerful they were. You understand? So you just see is that the degradation that comes down. So because of that background and that kind of the bourgeois prominence, therefore then, you know, that prestige, the money, the facility and all that, we judge everything by that. But we have to give that up because Krishna said you have to be detached. You can work in that field, but you have to be detached. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because if you're detached, then you can give it to Krishna. If you're attached, you can't fully give it to Krishna. You kind of... You know, it's like, like that. You know, it's like you put the basket there with all the samosas and all that, but there's a string attached into your pocket as you walk out. Then you ring the bell, and as you walk out, yeah, it's not going to work so good. Okay, then verses 31 to 35, Krishna returns to Hastinapur. Right? Krishna offered respects last out of modesty. Out of affection, he sent Arjuna first. Also, he stayed behind because he was very shy to assist in killing Jarasandha, since he was the crest jewel of good conduct. Verses 1 to 16. The kings offer prayers. Okay, so when he comes back, then if he comes in first, then he'll get all the glory for all that. But no, he sends in the others first, so then they get the glory. And then he went along with them. So then, Jarasandha, when we think of who killed Jarasandha? Bhima. Yes. We don't think of Krishna. But it's Krishna's arrangement. If Krishna hadn't showed him how to do it, would it happen? No.
This kind of instruction or philosophy should be given to the devotees who are like the kings that were already to rank of the Krishna, because many times when we talk about this, Like,
yes. So if you're talking to devotees about surrendering to Krishna, be detached from the body and everything connected to it, and they say, no, we're not on that level, you know, this is not for us, you know, we should just go on, you know, enjoying senses like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, and that's our level and all that, then you go and associate with those above that platform and preach to those below that platform. Because the new people will take it very nicely, and the advanced persons will take it very nicely. And the ones in the middle, then, hey, you know, what can you do? So in other words, don't bring these things up with them. Because it just, you know, it's also a rule, do not disturb the minds of those who are attached. So in other words, if you can discuss, and they'll listen and then try to apply it, then you discuss. But otherwise, then it doesn't have an advantage. You don't get anywhere. That makes sense. You know, I mean, other than kings who may do, because someone's creating trouble, they'll stop the trouble. But otherwise, the preaching and that, you can't do to them, because their identity is that they're not so advanced by convenience. The point is that they're more advanced than they were when they joined, and they joined because of that. I always remember one of the main preaching verses for getting people to join Krishna consciousness, you know, at the Sunday program and that, was Sarva Dharmam Parityajai, just give up everything, just surrender to Krishna. And people surrender. And now they can't surrender, oh, I'm not so advanced, I'm so quote-unquote humble. Like that. But then if they're so humble, why are they opposing what you're saying? Then they would say, yeah, that's the stand, I really am the one to do that, but I'm so attached and I'm so distracted and all that. Every time I try to surrender, I get distracted by something else not working, you know, so how are you surrendering that? They want to know how to do it, but they don't want to know how to do it, so they want to remain attached. So you don't say that. Talk about the weather, talk about how great the dessert is, that it has no, it's not sweet, it's so fabulous, you know. I've actually heard people say that. They eat the sweet. Wow, it's so nice. It's not so sweet. Okay. It's like that. Wow, I really love the pasta. It's not so Italian. You know? Yeah. No, but they'll say it's so Bengali. Okay. Verses 1 to 16, the kings offer prayers. Sukadeva Goswami said, Jarasandha had defeated 20,800 kings in combat and thrown them into prison. As these kings emerged from the Giridroni fortress, they appeared dirty and shabbily dressed. They were emaciated by hunger, their faces were dried up, and they were greatly weakened by their long imprisonment. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when they were released by the grace of Lord Krishna, they all looked very unhappy. Their garments were niggardly, and their faces were almost dried up for want of proper bodily care. They were very weak due to hunger, and their faces had lost all beauty and luster. The king's long imprisonment had caused every part of their bodies to become slack and invalid. However, because in that miserable condition, they had the opportunity to think about Lord Krishna. They immediately saw him now as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And so even though there was this difficult situation, because they had been remembering the Lord, now when they were able to see the Lord directly, so then that's the perfect thing. Right? The kings then beheld the Lord before him. His complexion was dark blue, like the color of a cloud. And he wore a yellow silk garment. He was distinguished by the Srivatsa mark on his chest, his four mighty arms, the pinkish hue of his eyes, which resembled the whorl of a lotus, his lovely, cheerful face, his gleaming Makara earrings, and the lotus club, conch shell, and disc in his hands, right? Because they were seeing him as Lord Vishnu, so he appeared to them as Lord Vishnu. A helmet, a jeweled necklace, a golden belt, and golden bracelets and armlets decorated his form, and on his neck he wore both a brilliant, precious Kostuba gem and a garland of forest flowers. The kings seemed to drink the beauty with their eyes. lick him with their tongues, relish his fragrance with their nostrils, and embrace him with their arms. Their past sins now eradicated, the kings all bowed down to Lord Hari, placing their heads at his feet.
I've heard sometimes people say that we are Krishna appear to them as Vishnu because that's how they pray to him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, one may claim that whatever form being is in, Krishna will have to appear in that form because that's
how he'll have to because we is imagine. But
not
is that
he has to, but he will appear if he wants, but then that's the people from there. The emphasis they were making on the form, not that he has to.
That's there, yes, yes.
But
means
it's not always a form.
Yes, that's why it's according to that, because if it's a form that's not according to scripture, then why would you go to Brad? Because that's different than what you're imagining. That's why we follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas and think of things according to how they define. Because if we don't, we think of something else, then who knows where we end up. Right? Like, I can't imagine where you end up where you have a guy with a, what is it, like a bird head? Isn't that one of the main ones? That's Ra, isn't it, for the Egyptians?
Yeah,
I mean, where do you end up there? You know, it's like that, unless they, you know, they become one of those Cheyenne eagles or something like that. But, you know, all kinds of stuff you end up with, so, yeah. Yes, so they've meditated on, seen him as the Supreme Lord, so he appears as the Supreme Lord. So it's just a matter of what you see, because it means how you're seeing the Lord, that's how he reciprocates. That's what it says. That's why we follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, because they see Krishna as Braja Krishna. We don't. We see them, they see Braja Krishna, so by then serving Krishna in that way, then we'll see Braja Krishna, because we're seeing him through them. It's not that we see Braja Krishna. We don't make Braja Krishna. Radharani makes Braja Krishna.
And I wouldn't have seen Braja Krishna.
No, our method of seeing Braja Krishna is through the devotees. And so they've given us this method of worship, and so then, therefore, we're worshiping using the Pancharatra. Mm-hmm. Point is we can only see because they see. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you won't see. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, okay, we're in a public place, like, let's say, an airport or an airplane or something like that, okay? And there's a baby, okay? Baby starts crying. All the guys around are going, oh no, not again, you know, like that. And so if you're looking at them, how are you going to relate to the child? A disturbance. Now, if you're in a position where you hear the sound, you look over, and then you see the mother with great affection interacting with the child, it's a whole different thing. That's another thing. But we're just doing this. Yeah. You understand? So that's the whole thing. You see them, then you see Braja Krishna. We're not going to see Braja Krishna at all. Why would he manifest as Braja Krishna to us? What are we offering? That what surrender are we giving Krishna that he'll manifest as Braja Krishna? You understand? Okay. In the ecstasy of beholding Lord Krishna having dispelled the weariness of their imprisonment, the king stood with joined palms and offered words of praise to the Supreme Master of the senses. The king said, obeisances to you, O Lord of the ruling demigods, O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress.
We didn't read the footnote.
We did not. I started at the two. Okay, so that means, okay. Their past sins now eradicated, the kings all bowed down to Lord Hari, placing their heads at his feet. Footnote 2. Most of their sins were destroyed on sending the messenger to Krishna previously. Now all the sins caused by non-attachment to Krishna were destroyed. Or their sins were destroyed by hearing about him, Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Prabhupada adds, just by dint of their being in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all reactions to their sinful activities were washed away. Therefore, without reservation, they surrendered themselves at the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that unless one is freed from all sinful reactions, one cannot fully surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. Why were their sins destroyed on sending a messenger?
But what was the message? What was it about? Yes. So they've surrendered to Krishna. So then with that, they've come to the understanding that that's the, you know, it's not that they were there from the day before that. Or that day they were thrown into jail, and so then that day then they offered the prayers, sent the messenger. You know, one, to be able to, you're in prison, how do you get a messenger? Yeah, you would have to spend some time getting a messenger. Like that. So, you know, all this time, so finally now they come to the point where they've surrendered. So then that does that first point. Right? Most of their sins. Now all sins caused by non-attachment to Krishna are destroyed. Right? So we've got two different kinds, right? That which is attachment to the material, that's given up. But then the non-attachment to Krishna is all given up. Because what's the effect of sins? You're not attached to Krishna. So this, we say we want to get rid of the sins, but more important is getting rid of the non-attachment to Krishna. Right? The one just comes by just you surrender, that's gone, but this other is by seeing Krishna, therefore by chanting, by serving the deities, all these different things.
And if we apply it to our own life, we see that they were in trouble, so they surrendered to Krishna and they were consistent.
Yes, yes.
When we surrender to the spiritual master, we have all the good intentions usually.
Yes.
So we are not consistent.
Yes, but as we can practice that, we become consistent. That's one of the other ways of defining, because, how do you say? You have the one way of you know, showing on the meditation, the five levels of meditation. Yes, all those. So then one is showing like the steps that it goes through according to the Vedic, is that remembering, and then, you know, like this it goes up. And there's another list that I remember we went through, is where it's occasionally you remember, and then more regularly, then stable, and then like this. So those would match. By remembering means it's occasionally you remember. Like that. Does that make sense? Because when it comes to samadhi and all that, then you're always remembering. So all that is that we've remembered once and we were happy, then what will happen is that it creates a seed to do that again. So just as the material seeds are there, the spiritual ones are also there. So if you do something and you like doing that and you try to do that, even if it doesn't maintain, and you say it's all lost, no, because that was devotion, that maintains. And so then the opportunity comes again to perform that devotional activity again. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that just keeps building. So here is that you're getting rid of the reactions to sins, but you have to get rid of the non-attachment to Krishna that comes about because of our, you know, focusing on the secondary aspects. So that's deeper.
But can you say that it comes to the level when we are almost past anatomy briefly? The second one.
Well, that's when you become more aware of, because the Narta Nivritti is more of giving up what's wrong, you know, improper, but the actual real, that's why that's called the Narta Nivritti there. But then when Rupa Goswami is talking about it in the, discussing the point in relationship to, you can say, spontaneous devotional service, you know, or Raganuga, that he's talking about after Narta Nivritti. But in there he means liberation, Brahma-bhuta. Because that's, you could say, is more of an anartha nivritti. You've given up the non-attachment. But now let's say we've given up the non-attachment. But that still doesn't mean we're attached. So then we have to develop that. Does that make sense? So, in other words, coming up to being fully absorbed in Krishna's samadhi, that then gets rid of all the non-attachment and all those things like that. But now from there, then apandas means now you're developing that attachment to Krishna. So in that sense, then that's where they'll define that position, technically, that's Surup Siddhi. You know, it means that Sahajiyas is just you think of your form in spiritual world, that's Surup Siddhi. No, it's not. Even if it is, it's not Siddhi. It may be Surup, but it's not Siddhi. Like I have potato, and then there's a boiled potato. I can't say because it's a potato, it's boiled. Right? So, until you come to the point of exclusively focusing on Krishna, and then you can take part in his pastimes, now you can say that's Surup Siddhi. Now it's the perfection of your form. Because now it's engaged in Krishna's service. But what is the actual essence of the form? That's the Vastu. So that means now when you come to Prema, that's Vastu Siddhi. Does that make sense? So you have these different aspects that they can be used on these lower levels. But it actually, this is its natural place. So Surup Siddhi is there, though you can say in the second position in Bhav Sadhana that you understand you're adjusting with your nature and everything of what is your service in the spiritual world. But you can't call that Siddhi. That may be Surup, but it's not Siddhi. So until you get to Purvarag, you can't call it Siddhi. Right? So when that form is now engaged directly in Krishna's service, now you can say that's Siddhi, but it's still not Vastu. Because you haven't developed Prema. So you come to Prema, that's Vastu. Does that make sense? Though it can be used in the others that I don't have the form here, so I'm just using it, you know, I'm in my Sarup as servant of Krishna. And then when I leave this body and go back to the spiritual world and then start that process that we previously just described, then we'll call that Vastu Siddhi. Right? But generally, it's in relationship to, if it, within this body you are doing the meditation, you come to Surup Siddhi. While in this body, so you're an apandas in this body, then when you come to that point, when you leave this body, that will be called Vastu Siddhi.
Can you say that's what happens with the disciples in Javadana?
Yeah, but that's Surup. That's not Surup Siddhi. Yeah, so the Sahajiyas will call that Surup Siddhi. They always talk about Surup Siddhi because that's all they want. Because then they can just speculate on what they're doing service to Krishna, what they're not at all. It means they're not anywhere near Vrindavan. No one's going to go near them. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, what do you call it? You heard the saying, you wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole? Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Have you seen the residents of Vrindavan walking around with 10-foot poles? No, because therefore, it can't be there. Because if it was there, then they'd all carry 10-foot poles to keep it that far away. So, they're not carrying poles, so you're not there. Is that...
Mm-hmm. Can you say that Purvarag is the place wherein this particular sin starts to...
Is Purvarag where these sins diminish? No, Purvarag is after they've already. See, now they've come to this point of seeing, so then it can get. But it has to be, Purvarag means it's exclusively thinking about Krishna and nothing else. No, but you're using the word Purvarag. So you have to be, it means don't mix examples. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Don't you mix examples. Is Purvarag means that it's come to that. Now, if they're on that platform, then they're there. And if they're not on that platform, then they're not. The point is Purvarag has that definition. I've never heard them use the example of Purvarag. Not that they can't be, but we have other examples. Why do we would use them? The point is they've become freed from most of their sins, and now the sins caused by non-attachment to Krishna are destroyed. Right? So that's what we have to gain, is that these two aspects, is that it's not just enough that we remove impiety, you have to remove that impiety that causes us to not be attracted to Krishna. Yeah? Srila Prabhupada adds, just by dint of their being in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all reactions to their sinful activities were washed away. Therefore, without reservation, they surrendered themselves at the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that unless one is freed from all sinful reactions, one cannot fully surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, right? So unless you fully surrender, then only you can, I mean, given up all sinful reactions, you can't fully surrender. So that means that there's something left that's creating a reaction that you're not surrendering. So when that's all washed away, then you can fully surrender. So we're surrendering for those moments, but it doesn't mean that we're always surrendering. So as much as we can remember and try to surrender, we do. And then in between we may forget, and then we remember again, we surrender. So you keep doing that, with time it builds up. It develops.
So I just forget that, but that's smart.
Yes, that's why it's always, that's why we read the stories about Krishna. What he says is then there's if we develop attachment for Krishna, then the process will go quicker. So that's why we're hearing philosophy and the Lord's pastimes. But because of the pastimes, so we won't take the material, so we'll take them in the proper way, therefore the philosophy is given along with them. The ecstasy of beholding Lord Krishna having dispelled the weariness of their imprisonment, the king stood with joined palms and offered words of praise to that supreme master of the senses. The king said, "Obeisances to you, O Lord of the ruling demigods, O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress. Since we have surrendered to you, O inexhaustible Krishna, please save us from this terrible material life, which has made us so despondent." Right? So the trouble that they're having, you know, being in prisons because of material life. You know, that's just the way it works. You know, at some point you're going to be in that position, in another position. It's just, so all despondency comes from being in the material world, from having given up Krishna consciousness. So they're saying, put us in a position, right? Oh, inexhaustible Krishna, please save us from this miserable material life, right? Which has made us so despondent, because that's what it is. So if we're situated in spiritual life, then they won't be despondent. That's the whole point. O Master Madhusudana, we do not blame this king of Magadha, since it is actually by your mercy that kings fall from their royal position. O Almighty Lord, right? So by falling, then you take up that humble mood and things work very nicely. And if you've gotten that mood, then naturally you can go back to your position you were. But if not, more difficult. Excuse me. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the following four verses, 10 through 13, show how losing their kingdoms became the cause of receiving the mercy of the Lord. The kings continued, "Infatuated with his opulence and ruling power, a king loses all restraint and cannot obtain his true welfare. Thus bewildered by your illusory energy, he imagines his temporary assets to be permanent, just as men of childish intelligence consider a mirage in the desert to be a pond of water. So those who are irrational look upon the illusory transformations of Maya as substantial." Right? That's why they're not vastu. "Previously, blinded by the intoxication of riches, we wanted to conquer this earth, and thus we fought one another to achieve victory. Mercilessly harassing our own subjects, we arrogantly disregarded you, O Lord, who stood before us as death." Right? So disregarding the Lord means disregarding it by this example in everything. So it's not just him as a person. It means it's everything, not seeing him in everything that we're dealing with. So what causes us to see everything just connected to our body rather than connected to Krishna? So that's sinful inclination. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "This is the disease of political power. As soon as a king becomes rich in material opulences, he wants to dominate other nations by military aggression. Similarly, mercantile men want to monopolize a certain type of business and control other mercantile groups. Impelled by false prestige and infatuated by material opulences, human society, instead of striving for Krishna consciousness, creates havoc and disrupts peaceful living. Thus men forget the real purpose of life, to attain the favor of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, one may know about being serving Krishna, but then when one comes into having material opulence, so whether it's coming from you know, the duties of a king or duties of economics, then in either way one becomes proud and then wants to control the whole thing and control everybody else, so that way then you get the enjoyment you want in a consistent way, right? And foolishly one thinks that can do that eternally, but it's not going to happen. So unnecessarily they fight with others because they think they're the best and everybody else thinks they're the best, right? So the intellectuals, they do that with the others, but they're all doing it to each other because each one thinks they're the best. Each administrator thinks he's the best. Each business person thinks they're the best, right? Each artist thinks they're the best. And so they just harass each other. It's not that they are the best and go on and are very gracious with everybody else. No, they have to harass. It's just part of the, it's just the way the modes work. And so they create a disruption. That's why we're saying peaceful means there's no attachment to the material. You're attached to Krishna. Because we can say is, okay, well, but by jnana they'll be detached, but then they don't do anything, one. And two, they're not actually fully detached because they want liberation. So they don't want to be disturbed by the material duties. So only a devotee becomes peaceful because he doesn't see himself as the controller, enjoyer, or friend. Krishna's a friend. Krishna's sitting in everyone's heart. He's taking care. It's not that we're organizing that whole friendship thing happening and because of us, everything's becoming so nice. And no, it's Krishna does. So if we see like that, we become peaceful. So their point is that as materialists, they were becoming more and more disturbed and disturbing others, even their own citizens. But now they've surrendered to Krishna, so Krishna says, now you should go back to your kingdom, then you know, perform your duties, do your sacrifices, you know, take care and remember Krishna, do everything connected to him. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So now they're pointing out is that's the whole point. So because otherwise they couldn't see Krishna in any form, mm-hmm. let alone his personal form. Mm-hmm. The kings continued, but now, O Krishna, that powerful form of yours called time, moving mysteriously and irresistibly, has deprived us of our opulences. Now that you have mercifully destroyed our pride, we beg simply to remember your lotus feet. Never again will we hanker for a miracle-like kingdom, a mirage-like kingdom, a kingdom that must be slavishly served by this mortal body, which is simply a source of disease and suffering, and which is declining at every moment. Nor, O Almighty Lord, will we hanker to enjoy the heavenly fruits of pious work in the next life, since the promise of such rewards is simply an empty enticement for the ears. Right? It sounds good. Mm-hmm. So all these, the results of fruitive work are all empty enticements. So whether it's piety and talking about the benefits you'll get from there, or it's not based on at least religious piety, it's based on social piety. And so therefore then all this will be great and everyone's together and all that. But it's simply an enticement for the ear. Because unless it's connected to the Lord, then it's a waste of time.
Yes. I was wondering that... And all these kings, like 20,000, that they suddenly gradually start worshipping Krishna, all of them together. Is that because they understand finally that only Krishna can?
Yes. Yes. It means they know that. It means they're part of the Vedic culture. They all learn that. It's just just like we see is, we haven't come up to it yet. But, or no, we did before. Ill-motivated Dhritarashtra? Yeah. It was already before. So I think it's three pages of him just talking about how he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he controls everything. Everything's going to go the way he says. So it's not that they don't know. It's not that the demons don't know. It's the demons don't care. They come up with their own plan. A demigod, then when they're reminded, they surrender to Krishna. Like the demigods Dhritarashtra attacks, they go out and fight and all that. When they're defeated by him, then they remember the Lord. While the demons, they go out, they fight and are defeated, they don't remember the Lord. Okay. Nice. So then you see is Bali Maharaj is defeated, doesn't remember the Lord, but, you know, becomes humble and becomes more pious, so therefore he worships his guru. Indra, having, you know, won the battle and all that, now he becomes proud of that, like they're saying, and now he ignores his guru and insults his guru. And so the demigods, their position goes down, and the demons, it goes up, because you have to respect authority. But the point is it's only when you remember the Lord, then things become positive. Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhakti Indaki, Jai Nitai Gaura Krishna.